How you guys doing? Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome to the Nick Wilson Show.
Sounds like a typical bastard.
What's going on in Nick Wilson's mind?
My mind is a raging torrent flooded with rivulets of thought.
You're about to find out.
Look who knows so much.
Nick Wilson is on now.
Radio 92.7 FNZ, Willie P. in the building. You guys are weird. You guys are very bad. Very, very, very bad individuals. We were talking. So Julianne's making dinner tonight. She's making her famous shrimp and grits. Very, very happy about this.
What makes them famous? They're not on a menu at some restaurant.
I'm just saying. She brings this dish up north to her family in Indiana, and they rave. They rave all around the Midwest. That's where the word of mouth is, man. You got to make the food of the local delicacy here, up there, and you spread the word of great Southern cooking.
Can I disclose something to you?
Don't tell me you don't like shrimp and grits.
I've never had it.
Well, there you go.
Because when you go out to order, shrimp and grits is rather pricey.
She's a rather discerning shrimp and grits diner too, as well.
And when we eat shrimp at home, it's always wrapped in bacon on a grill.
Understand it.
With a steak and a baked potato and a Caesar salad.
I love skillet shrimp. Big fan of skillet shrimp.
So, you know, look, if there's some leftovers, just put them in a nice little Tupperware container. I'll see you tomorrow about 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. We can have a taste test.
We might have to have a taste test on those. She makes two different styles. She makes the savory style, the Charleston style. That's more of a tomatoey one. And then there's the one you can make that's more white and creamy. So I like the Charleston style more.
Okay.
Stop it.
Okay.
Stop it. You're the freaking worst. I can't do anything with you. So
I didn't say anything.
That will all be after Crown Corner, by the way, tonight, 6 o'clock on WFNZ's social channels, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Myself and Jessica Charman will be talking Charlotte FC with you guys. Harrison Offal is going to join us on that program as well. So we're very much looking forward to talking to him. And a great interview with a member of the Charlotte FC African Supporters Union. This guy, Benedict Jima, is one of the best of the supporter group that we ended up bringing on this season. You want to hear that interview and the kinds of strides that Charlotte FC is doing with not just the African-American community, but those who are of African descent directly, like Benedict is. And real, real great stuff with seeing not just what Harrison Offal and Derek Jones have meant to this community, but also what it means for the sport at large. Anyway, we also will talk a lot about what's going on still yet on this show about what the Hornets are going to do, whether it's make the picks, trade the picks, get a veteran, get a higher pick, et cetera, and so on. Five questions later on this hour. DeShaun Tate is going to join us an hour from now to talk everything involving NBA draft. Now, before we do anything, though, it is time for the Nooners. These are all the stories that are going on across our purview, not just in Charlotte, but across the country. And this is from Skip Bayless, who, I mean, you want to talk about a guy who's in a glass house and trying to throw stones? This is Skip Bayless talking about our own Michael Jordan.
Michael Jeffrey Jordan has become the most woeful team owner / operator / GM in the history of basketball. I'm talking about 17 years of ownership in Charlotte with three playoff appearances and no playoff series win.
Right.
You did get to a game 7 against Miami one year with Steve Clifford as your head coach.
Right.
But it's just been abysmally, painfully bad. It's hard for me to watch because I love this man so much, and I know how much this means to him, and it's tearing him apart.
Of course.
He just can't do it.
Listen, I'm all about this is the way that I feel about MJ. Like, I feel like MJ is our person to make fun of for how bad of an owner he is for the Charlotte Hornets. But when other people do it, I get somewhat irrational and somewhat sideways.
Well, and also, like, look. Yeah,
it's lazy.
On the court, yeah, the Hornets aren't very – they haven't been very good under him. Is he the worst owner, though, in the NBA? In the history of the NBA?
No.
No. Look at the owner of the Sacramento Kings, dumpster fire. Don Sterling lost to Clippers because he was a racist. Like, he could be a lot worse off the court. And on the court, he's not. He's just, you know what Michael Jordan is? He's a mid-owner.
Right.
He's the GOAT on the court. He's a mid-owner off the court.
But the problem is, he also is somebody who acts like an erratic owner because he apparently is affected by the opinions given of him. Because, you know, the way that Borrego got fired and the subsequent turn to Mike D'Antoni makes him kind of feel like he gives a darn what people think about him. How does he? Well, he almost sounds like me. But I'm just saying, it's odd to think about it like that. But I think that's kind of the way that he goes about owning this basketball team, is that he actually cares what the opinion is of him, and sometimes that causes a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction. Now, given where the Hornets are when it comes to the draft tomorrow, we're having the discussion about whether or not they will make the picks or not coming up tomorrow. Coming up tomorrow in the draft, we'll make that discussion happen at 12:20. But if Mark Williams is available, that should possibly be the pick that the Hornets make at one of those two spots. And Jay Billis, who was on the Mac Attack this morning, says he should be there for the Hornets to take and those spots if they don't move or they don't trade those picks.
Yeah, Williams seems to be a pick for Charlotte. Like, I don't know what Charlotte's going to do at 13. My guess is that Williams will be available at 15, because Cleveland, if I remember right, drafts at 14, and I don't think they're gonna take a big guy. So it's likely that if Williams lasts that long, he'll stay to 15.
Of course, I got somewhat of a bit of a chuckle when Bone said this morning that he would shave his eyebrows if Cleveland ends up taking a big. Although he then later clarified and said, if Cleveland has a big on their roster who was taken with the 14th pick, he did not account for the if Cleveland drafts a big for somebody else and it ends up going via trade. So he at least made that qualifier happen.
That really sucks he clarified that, because I'd love to see Travis T-Bone Hancock with no eyebrows.
Yeah, it was Mac shave his eyebrows. So it would be
Mac would shave his eyebrows?
No, I'm saying Mac would be the one shaving Bone's eyebrows.
Oh, that's even better.
I think Mac said he would watch Hornets games blindfolded. It almost sounds like a treat. No, I'm sorry. That was bad. I'm sorry. That one was way too easy, guys. I'm sorry. That one was way too easy. That is very, very bad. That's, you know what that is? That's me sitting next to you for 3 days.
You're not blaming me for you becoming a degenerate as well.
I mean, you give off a degenerate vibe. It's like when a skunk sprays, you almost start smelling like the degenerate, and that's kind of the way it works here when you work with Itty Bitty Fitty. I'm also still, like I mentioned in the panic meter, I'm not loving this Chet chat around Miles Bridges. I'm just not. I'm finding it rather nerve-wracking. I'm finding it almost absurd. And more national people. Yesterday it was Brian Geltzeiler on the Mac Attack saying that Miles Bridges is not the max player. And then I had James Herbert on from CBSSports.com, and he also said he's reticent to give Miles the max.
He's made strides even as a defender. I think if I were a little more confident that he would be like an elite high level defender, where it's like, all right, he can guard all four, like he can guard maybe all five positions, but really, like, he can guard point guard, he can guard bigs, like, you know, not the like Joel Embiid and Jokic of the world, but like some bigs, like on a night to night basis, and do it at an elite level, then yeah, maybe I would go there, because I love the way his offense develops.
You could make the argument right now that among the rostered players, because Miles is still technically rostered because the league year doesn't turn over until July, but among the rostered players for the Hornets, he's probably the most consistent two-way player they have. And LaMelo Ball is probably better offensively, obviously, but LaMelo is still a work in progress defensively. In terms of the highest level of his game, he's probably the best and most competent two-way player that they have. And if that's not worth keeping on the roster, then what are we even doing here?
I don't know if he's worthy of a max contract, but this is not a situation where the Hornets should get outbid for him.
Right. Like
if it comes down to money, you need to pay him, and you have the ability to pay him more money.
I mean, how many times do we look at an NBA contract in an offseason and we say, wow, that guy got that?
Yeah.
The only time that we say that is when it involves the Charlotte Hornets, is when it happened to Gordon Hayward, and we're like, why'd we give a guy who's never on the floor that money?
Or Nick Batum.
That's awesome. I was trying to conveniently forget about Nick Vitu.
And Terry Rozier, we also said he got that. Like,
I mean, I said that. I don't know a lot of other people who said that.
Like that's the thing with the track record of the guys that you have paid. You paid Nick Vitu. You paid Terry Rozier. You paid Gordon Hayward.
And those guys shouldn't be the reason you don't pay Miles Bridges.
Yeah, there's no way in hell you can defend not paying Miles. Give him the bag and the drawstrings.
That's the other point of it. This is that. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, right, wrong, or indifferent, this organization has been somewhat portrayed as one that's cheap.
They are.
And portrayed as one, I mean, you look no further than the alleged story from Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report with the Kenny Atkinson spurn, where he basically said Atkinson was going to be forced to retain most, if not all, the Hornets assistants because they're all on one-year deals. And so he would not be able to form his own staff, and that was basically done as a cost-cutting measure. Well, to me, Fitty, I look at this organization and I say, man, you know, I'm really trying to shed the moniker. It's an organization that isn't going to pay people. Well, if you're trying to shed that moniker and you don't pay Miles Bridges, you're not doing a very good job of shedding that moniker. So, either way. Yesterday, we found out that Deshaun Watson settled 20 of the 24 lawsuits that were pending against him in civil litigation for his alleged sexual misconduct. A lot of people wondering what that might mean in terms of the NFL's disciplinary action against him. Adam Schefter of ESPN offered this to that.
Well, the NFL says today's events and developments will have no impact on the decision of whether or not to discipline Deshaun Watson. And it certainly looks like the NFL right now would like to impose a lengthy suspension upon Deshaun Watson. And the NFLPA might not believe that that's warranted and certainly will be defending Deshaun Watson against that. And Lisa Friel, the NFL's lead investigator here, is expected to turn over her evidence from her interviews. And she's spoken to multiple women who have accused Deshaun Watson here to the independent disciplinary officer, Sue Robinson. And Sue Robinson then would make a recommendation about what she believes would be the proper discipline after hearing all the evidence. The NFL, the NFLPA, somebody, either one could appeal to Roger Goodell or the appeals officer, whoever he decides it will be. But it certainly sounds like it's coming sooner rather than later. The league has wanted to get this wrapped up before training camp, and I think it well may be before that, L.
Now, here's my problem with this whole thing, is that I understand the NFLPA has an obligation to the players to fight on their behalf. How bad of a look is it if the NFLPA is going to appeal suspension? Let's just say he gets suspended a year. How bad of a look is the NFLPA going to have on itself if it's trying to defend Deshaun Watson and ask for leniency there?
It's going to be a bad look, but they've appealed roughly every suspension in regards to off-field incidents, so They're going to appeal it.
Right.
I've said from the word go, the minimum is 6 games. The maximum and what he should be suspended for is a year.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it's somewhere, you know, in between that 6 games to 17-game threshold.
Here's the problem, and I feel like this could possibly happen because it happened with Ben Roethlisberger. It probably is going to start out at a very high level, like a year, and it probably will be bet down to something like 12 weeks.
The biggest issue, and I heard Mac talk about this morning, is the way his contract is set up.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what happens this year,
it's a very, very, very minimal payout this year, right?
Well, because it's all like the bonus money and stuff like that. So it's all guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So no matter if he plays or not, he's still going to make money. So, I mean, it's smart by the Browns to show that they were going to take care of him and stuff like that. But it also just shows you, I guess, the morals that don't exist in the National Football League.
I was very adamant I didn't want it. Nope. After everything that happened, I was very adamant about that. I did not change my position on it, and I am very glad that that is not our problem. I'm very glad that is not our problem. I'm sorry. It's just not. Texter says, would last year not count as a suspension? No.
Nope.
Because guess what? Houston Texans could have played him.
Yep.
They very well could have played him, but they chose not to, or, you know, he chose not to, et cetera, and so on. I don't think that counts at all. I don't think you get time served in this scenario. You know what? I wouldn't care whether or not he did, because I think that, honestly, as a human being, there are some questionable things about him that I just did not want as a part of my organization. Didn't like it. It is the Nick Wilson Show. Those are the Nooners on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. We'll come back. what to do with these picks. We talked about the players they might look at, but now we might talk about exactly what they should do. Should they make the picks, trade the picks for a higher pick, or a veteran? The Charlotte Hornets with the draft tomorrow on Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. Radio 92.7 FNZ, Willie P. in for Nick Wilson. I very much enjoyed Kyle Bailey coming in during the break and berating Josh Marlow for, one, never having shrimp and grits, and two, his disdain for pimento cheese, which I think this is the second day in a row that we've talked about this, and I still don't have a very good answer from you on that.
I just don't like it. And I've tried, like, at different places. I've tried it at Pinky's.
Mm.
I've tried it at Twin Peaks.
Mm. Have you had it alone or with other things?
I've like both. Like, I've had it like as, you know, just a regular side or whatever. Mm. And then I've tried it like on my burger or something like that, and I don't care for it. I've had it at Bojangles.
Mm.
Just not a fan of pimento cheese.
I don't understand you. Did we talk about Cheerwine at all or no?
Yeah, I'm pro Cheerwine. Yeah, I'm not I'm not Mac and T-Bone.
Okay, good. Okay. At least you have something. Something good to your name there. We're going to discuss food a little bit more at 12:40 as part of the five questions, because we were having this discussion last night whilst at dinner about the best wing flavor. I'm going to get your thoughts here on that coming up in part of the five questions. But before we do that, we'll talk some NBA draft here with the Hornets. They are 13-15 right now. 13th overall, 15th overall. By the way, our coverage tomorrow, Kyle Bailey anchors it from 8 until 10 tomorrow night from Spectrum Center. That is right here on Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. We'll have opportunities to talk with people inside the Hornet front office and kind of get you an idea of what they're doing and also what they might do outside of actually taking picks, because so much of the discussion surrounding the Hornets yesterday was any or all the deals that they might have. Now, the question of will they or won't they was answered by Brian Geltzeiler of NBA Radio earlier on the Mac Attack yesterday. He says he believes the Hornets are in a position where they need more developmental talent, not necessarily bringing in a veteran.
I still think you got to play the long game with the big picture. If there's guys you like at 13 and 15, go get them. Now, what I would love to see Charlotte do is package them both and try to move up and see if you can get yourself a better, a higher impact player. That I would like to see done. Now, is that going to be available to them? Who knows? Word is that, you know, the number 4 pick in Sacramento is in play because I'm not sure they want another guard in Jaden Ivey. So that you may see. Can 13 and 15 get you the 4 pick? Probably not. You may have to throw a player in, or maybe a future first if that's what you want. But to me, I'd be more apt to do that than to go get a veteran because, again, you want to give yourself the highest ceiling you can. Another veteran on board may make you a little bit better next year, but where is it taking you long term?
Now, that's the problem that I have, the only problem I really have with the Miles Turner proposed deal that we talked about yesterday. Right at the end of the show, we got a rumor from Evan Massey that said the Hornets could possibly be in play for a deal with the Indiana Pacers. Stop me if you've heard this one before. For Miles Turner, who has been the oft-talked-about and oft-rumored potential addition for the Charlotte Hornets since basically the moment that the franchise went from the Bobcats back to the Hornets. I don't think that's that long, but again, you get the idea. Problem is, Turner is in the final year of a one-year deal, and he's just coming off an off-season surgery. So at the end of this season, you will not have the ability to extend him, I believe, especially if you're trying to get money off the books with Miles Bridges. The problem is Turner is no longer a long-term play. He is a bridge play. And, oh, by the way, you are still dealing with whether or not you actually have your big of the future on the roster, albeit it, whether it's Kai Jones and or Mark Williams if you draft him at 13. That's the big issue right now, is that if you are Charlotte, you are getting Miles Turner to act as the bridge between your center of the now and your center of the future. It just depends on who you feel like that center of the future is, whether it's Williams or Jones, if you get Williams, that is. And I don't know if that offers you enough time. That's the biggest problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Miles Turner is as attractive as he was, you know, the other 18 times he was mentioned in trade discussions.
I'll say this. At the trade deadline, I wanted him, but they ended up getting Montrezl Harrell, and I think Harrell provided them something that they didn't have. They had a real great rim protector. They had somebody who could be a great rebounder for you, and somebody who I think when you saw him play for the Hornets last year, they brought a different intensity on the floor. Now, Harrell, as an option himself, probably will have an issue with that option because of what happened off the floor. I don't know if it's going to necessarily impact his availability in the offseason, but I do feel like that might be a bit of a deterrent for some teams if they're looking at him. That being said, Turner offers you an ability to get rid of Gordon Hayward's contract, which is probably the only reason why you're entertaining the deal right now as currently constituted, because I do feel like if you are thinking that Hayward's deal is a deterrent from bringing back Miles Bridges, you have to get rid of him as soon as you can.
Yes.
Is that all you have on that?
You kind of caught me off guard.
Sorry. I know you were looking at something. Our boss walked in and you were looking at him. No, but the issue that I have with the folks who don't like the deal is that they're trying to say that the player's not good. I think the player is still great. I think the player offers you something that the Hornets don't have. The problem is it's on an inspiring contract and you don't have an adequate option beyond him that you've seen yet. Kai Jones can come out this year and
If you trade for Turner,
yeah,
you still theoretically you'll have Plumlee on the roster.
Yeah.
You'll still have Kai Jones who's developing.
But here's the thing. I don't want Plumlee taking minutes away from Kai Jones.
I don't either, but okay, so right there you've got a three-headed trio. Now, if you trade for Turner, that probably means you're not drafting a Mark Williams or a Jalen Duren at 13.
I don't know if that's necessarily correct.
I'd be inclined if you got three big men to go get a wing at 13 or at 13 or 50, whichever pick you don't trade away.
Turner and Plumlee are both gone after 1 year. And you're back in the same predicament.
So you're going to have four big guys era where the big guy is devalued.
I think you trade Richards obviously, and I think you trade somebody. You probably have to trade Plumlee too to get a wing.
I don't think you're trading Plumlee and getting anything back.
Expiring contract.
But it's also a very cheap expiring contract.
I understand.
So I think
could be included with Oubre also.
Oh, okay. We're not trading away Kelly Oubre.
I thought you were very much on the trade Kelly Oubre.
No, I am the defender of Kelly Oubre on the station.
I'm getting you confused with Mac because Mac was trying to trade Kelly Oubre at about 50 deals last week.
Yeah, no, I'm not trading away Kelly Oubre until you have another guy off the bench that can fill up the bucket like he can.
I actually like Kelly Oubre. Thank you. The problem is I have issues with what else is on the roster that if I have to get rid of Kelly Oubre to improve the overall roster as a whole, I'm okay with it. If I get a significant improvement as part of, him being a part of that deal because he's an expiring contract, if it gets me somebody who can be a starter, I'm all for it.
You still got to have guys off the bench that can put the ball in the bucket, and outside of Oubre, that doesn't exist on this roster.
If you can trade Oubre for a starter, would you?
No. No. You got to have guys off the bench that can score. If you trade away your best...
You could find that.
They haven't, and James Bouknight isn't ready. Kai Jones isn't ready. So,
I'm not advocating for it.
Now, if you're trading Oubre and you're getting back two bench players to kind of replace that production, I always thought maybe, and this would be a mega deal and a lot would go into it. If you're trading for Rudy Gobert and Jordan Clarkson and Oubre is involved, hell yes. Because Clarkson is an upgrade off the bench over Kelly Oubre.
Sure.
But
it would have to be a deal that includes a lot of pieces. I'm not saying it would be a singular type deal.
You would have to get back enough to justify giving up right now your only legit scoring option off the bench.
I don't think anybody on this roster is beyond reproach other than LaMelo Ball right now, honestly. Other than LaMelo Ball and Bridges, of course, because Bridges is on the market, but... or soon to be on the market, I should say. I don't think anybody on this roster is untouchable at this point. And that's something that Wolfpack James brings up on the text line. Texter brings up, is Kai Jones athletic enough to play power forward with Mark Williams and Turner at center? I don't know if that's what you want, because I don't know enough about what Kai Jones could shoot at the next level yet. That's a part of it. Because if you're doing that, you're telling me that Kai Jones has worked on his outside game.
Well, I mean, like, defensively, that would be, you know, a win for you because you've got so much length on the perimeter, and then you'll be able to, you know, protect the rim a lot better and stuff like that.
Then you turn PJ into a bench player.
But then you could be, you could effectively be playing 3-on-5 on offense.
That's a problem.
If Kai Jones doesn't have a jump shot that is respectable.
That's what I'm saying, is that I don't know if Kai Jones' offensive game, because that's the part I think of his game that still needs to develop a lot. But again, I think that's an experiment that's not ready to be had yet. For where the Hornets are, there is talk about whether or not the Hornets can package those two picks with a player and move up to, you know, somewhere in the top 4, 5, or 6. And Jay Billis had talked about somebody who they did bring in, and that was the guy who sat out last year at Kentucky, and that's Shaedon Sharpe.
But his ceiling, you know, it's one of those things. His ceiling is really, really high. And so if any team, Hornets included, decide to trade up, you better trade up to, you know, to 6.
Yeah,
because he may be gone at 6. Who knows? Like,
now that's the part of it that I feel could be somewhat intriguing for the Hornets. Because here's the thing: if you go up and get somebody who is, you know, in that top 4, 5, or 6, that maybe means that the growth accelerator is a little bit faster on a player of that nature, and you're not dealing with a project like you would a big. Because what do we always say about these guys? The guards and the wings develop quicker than the bigs do. Because I still think, even if you draft Mark Williams, I'm not saying he'll need some seasoning in Greensboro, but I doubt he's a finished product at this level yet.
Oh, no. Because he still has to develop a jump shot and stuff like that. If you're trading up to go get a Shaedon Sharpe, what you're effectively doing is you're banking on that guy being the third piece to your big three of LaMelo, likely, hopefully, Miles Bridges, and then that player.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what I would think of it. If they package those two picks, move all the way up to get that guy. Because Billis also said that had Sharpe come back to school, he would enter next year's draft process the presumptive number one pick.
And that's something that you can't ignore. Like, but again, you're dealing with somebody who's also very, very raw and hasn't played basketball, at least competitively.
In over a year.
And that's something you're taking a risk on with LaMelo Ball, and it proved out to be right. But those risks are always calculated ones. Now, the one thing still that the Hornets do need is that they just need more two-way talent on this roster, and that's something that James Herbert agreed with when we had him on yesterday on the Nick Wilson Show.
Defensive versatility and just having more of a two-way roster and having more two-way players on the roster. I mean,
yeah, and that's
why a guy like Ochai Agbaji, Jeremy Sochan, like that's why those guys at 13 or 15, they make a lot of sense. They're two-way players, something that outside of really Miles Bridges.
Cody.
And is Cody, though, like enough of an offensive weapon to consider him?
It's gotten better, but it's not where you'd want it to be fully
right.
Two-way.
So you have like one legit two-way player on your roster right now in an era of basketball where you can win titles with two or three stars and a roster full of two-way players.
Matt Greensboro says, Kai has a respectable outside shot, not great yet, but not terrible. Yeah, it was great in Greensboro, is all I'm saying, and it was great at the college level. I need to see him hit those things consistently at the NBA floor or at the NBA level before I can say that he's there with that. It is the Nick Wilson Show, Sports Radio 93.7 WFNZ. We'll talk more draft with a guy who knows the college game about as well as anybody, and that's DeShaun Tate, who will join us coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll also get into some Charlotte FC stuff at 1:20. Before we do anything, 5 questions across the sports world and beyond next on Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. Willie P. in the building. Hope you're enjoying yourself on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon evening. I just saw a story that apparently Sports Illustrated is trying to build a mega resort in Mississippi, off the Mississippi coast, $410 million, one of its first in the U.S. Hotels, restaurants, and attractions Mississippi has never seen before. I don't know. They, those guys have never been to the Grove in Oxford. Just saying. It is what it is. We were talking a lot about the different things the Hornets are going to do, and you know, Chad Harris has put forth a deal. He wants Malachi Branham from Ohio State. He wants Eason out of LSU, and then he wants 7-foot project center out of Australia. So he said, "You're welcome, Mitch. Venmo me your salary." It's funny. That's all good. It's all good. Wolfpack James is in the Agbaji camp, by the way. Very, very full in the Agbaji camp. I was able to reconcile having a Kansas guy on the roster when the Hornets had Devontae Graham. I'll have to do it again if they get Agbaji, but you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow. 8 o'clock is when we're on the air for that on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. 8 until 10 is when we'll take the coverage as the Hornets drafting 13th and 15th. We'll see whether or not the Hornets can get themselves an opportunity to improve their roster. It is now time for 5 questions across the Nick Wilson Show, Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. And the first question we're asking is, how does making the Miles decision affect LaMelo Ball? Now, Ashley Strohlein tackled this particular part of the question on Tuesday's edition of the Mac Attack by saying, this could be a situation that triggers some unhappiness from the man who is soon to be wearing number one on the Hornets.
In that case, in my opinion, Melo is probably just sitting back and counting down the days until he could possibly go somewhere else. And how could you blame him? I mean, part of what he enjoys about being here, I think, is, one, we know how much he lives and breathes basketball, but it's also having fun doing that. And that, you look at the chemistry between him and Miles and Terry and some of those guys on the team, they're a young, fun bunch. If you get to sit back and watch the team not even make a true effort to keep him, then you got to be like, okay, that kind of showed me your true colors. I can go be a star. I'm already a star. Now I can go to a New York or an L.A. and be in one of these top markets with a franchise that's already well-known, win or lose, and I can go be even, an even bigger star. So why am I going to stay here and give my best years to Charlotte if they're not going to do what needs to be done?
That is WCNC's Ashley Strohlein speaking about the Miles LaMelo dilemma. Look, as much as I love indulging in the will LaMelo leave discussion, we've always heard the same refrain over and over again. No player has ever turned down the rookie Supermax, which LaMelo will definitely be eligible for, and one would think he would accept it, which basically takes it out to year 7. But I do feel like, at least for the time being, you do have to be kind of currying some favor to him because of the fact that he represents the only true hope for this franchise to go forward. And if you don't have that with him, then really what do you have?
Yeah, it's one of those things where the Hornets have to be in the business of LaMelo Ball. Every decision that you make, I'm not saying should be approved by LaMelo, but should be done in the best interest of your young superstar. Letting his best friend, his Robin to his Batman, walk away, you might as well kiss goodbye to him resigning here as a for the short term. So that's something they got to juggle. Is it worth losing LaMelo Ball for the next 5 years to let Miles Bridges walk away over a handful of millions of dollars? I wouldn't think so.
I just, to me, this organization needs a good thing to happen for it. Whether it's a trade, whether it's re-signing Miles. I mean, there's been a lot of negativity around this franchise since really, you know, the better part of the middle part of the season. Like, that, what was the last good thing that happened for the Hornets other than the Montrezl Harrell trade? Like, that was something that really was a good moment and got them a little bit of an infusion of good play, but they very much played very, very well down the stretch, but we had reservations about what they were going to do in the play-in game, and all of a sudden, we saw what happened, and ever since then, it's just been kind of eh.
Mm-hmm.
Not good. Second question, will Brian Burns have a new deal by the end of training camp? We asked this to Joe Person. He says it's probably going to take the more of the timeline that we saw for DJ Moore, because DJ Moore, basically in his quote-unquote walk year, got himself all that nice, shiny new money this offseason. My question to you, Itty Bitty Fitty, is how much are you worried about Brian Burns' production also in concert with that, with not having somebody on the opposite side of him that you'd think is solid like you had with Hassan Reddick last year?
I think that's the reason why they're going to play the waiting game. I think they're going to pay Brian Burns. I think they need to pay Brian Burns, but what do you pay him? What does the production look like? He's had, you got to remember, he still has yet to record a double-digit sack season in the NFL. So they, by that standard, he's not even an elite pass rusher. If he goes out this year with no Hassan Reddick and gets 10 or more sacks, then you have to be willing to open up the purse strings a little bit more often. So I think this is a smart move by the Panthers to play the waiting game, figure out where he falls, you know, on the pay scale, then give him his money.
It's... I want to give Brian Burns his money. I really badly do. But I also want the best version of Brian Burns. And I'm hoping that this year does not involve a backslide for him, because he's getting constantly chipped. And when we saw that happening with both Burns and Reddick last year, when they weren't on the field at the same time as much as each other, we saw a downturn in both their performances. They both started very, very hot, but didn't get a lot done in the latter part of the season. Does the latest move by the PGA Tour offer some respite for the folks at LIV Golf, or at least some of the golfers who went to LIV Golf? The PGA Tour yesterday announced that they're going to have 8 events, which are limited fields and no cut events, with purses around $20 million, trying to jockey the field a little bit and add some more pizzazz to a very long and arduous golf season that has a lot of anonymous events that don't really capture the attention of the casual fan at large. Does this offer, in your mind, itty bitty fitty, a potential for getting some of those guys back, or is it already too little too late?
I think it's more about the PGA is already conceding to the LIV Tour. They're overreacting to what's happening. Golf is a game that should be played over 4 days. You shouldn't be giving in to what this new golf league is demanding, because these guys don't want to play, you know, 72 holes. They don't want to play the way that the PGA Tour requires them. It might get you some of the guys back.
I don't even know if the 3-day versus 4-day thing is even the big issue here. The issue here is the guaranteed money for just showing up.
Yeah.
Is the big thing that I feel like was the enticing part.
Yeah, because you can go out there and shoot 38 over par, and you're still going to be walking home with a buttload of money.
Now, there's some people who believe that, you know, that's what adds to the allure of golf, is that adds to the urgency. Maybe you lose a little bit of your edge by having a signing bonus. Here it is. Multiple $20 million tournaments in 2023 as an attempt to combat LIV Golf. This is according to Golf Digest and Golf Week. They had the same particular report that's out there. I'm looking at this and I'm saying it's great, but you know, limited field, it'll be a 70 golfer field. Is that enough sizzle for you as a golf fan to even pay attention there? I don't know.
No, it's not.
Last night we had wings, and I'm very much a wing purist. I really only like for the most part buffalo wings.
Yep.
Like, I'm not into the lemon pepper. I'm not into the garlic parmesan. I will sometimes entertain a barbecue wing. Mm-hmm. If it's like a traditional barbecue sauce. But you can miss me on the rest. What is the best wing flavor in your mind, Itty Bitty Fitty?
I'm with you. I am a, you know, buffalo, a hot, like one of those variety. I like my barbecue on a boneless wing. I don't like it per se on a bone-in wing.
I also don't like boneless wings at all, because I think boneless wings are chicken nuggets and not really wings.
That's a different argument for a different day. Flounder's a big lemon pepper guy. Like, the problem is if they're not seasoned right, it's a trash wing.
I also need my wings wet. Like, I need them swimming in the sauce.
Do you like breaded hot wings, or do you not like them?
No, because I think you're covering for a poor chicken wing if you're breading your wing.
Mm.
Is that bougie of me?
No, I mean, like, you know, like when I go to
Hooters.
I've
done them both ways. And honestly, like, when you're doing them at home, if you use the breaded wings, that messes with your oil. Like, you have to, like, change your oil out because the breading gets stuck in the oil. So, yeah, no, I'm not a fan of the breaded wings.
Can I recommend you a good wing place in the Queen City to go to?
I think you've recommended this place to me before, and I haven't gone yet. Which place is it?
Queen City Wings.
You have?
Yes.
You have recommended me this.
You need to go by there. They've got really good onion rings as well, so they've got a good side game to go with your chicken wings.
I'm a sucker for the homemade chips. Like the raw fries. Like, I'm a big fan of that. And what should be the first thing that I put on my smoker? I've been texting back and forth with Eric McLean and he and I have been comparing notes. I think I have to go pork butt before I go the brisket flat all the way. I feel like I have to walk before I can crawl there. Or, I'm sorry, crawl before I can walk.
I was going to recommend maybe some sausage.
This is a little too on the nose coming from you.
No, because I mean, like I know with your background, you're big into the sausages, so I know.
I do love sausage.
You know, maybe get some sausage and some butts and just combine them together.
You are. That's so bad. That's so bad. You need to go sit in the corner in timeout because that was way. You're not allowed to set up your own lob there, pal. That this is not the slam dunk contest, okay? You can't be setting up your own lob like that. That is five questions. I should know better. I walked right into that one. It's so bad. On Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. Back to the NBA draft talk. DeShaun Tate will tell us everything that he thinks about the prospects that are looking at the possibility of being drafted by the Hornets. Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ.